The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Live from the WTBR studios in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, it's the Zook Romeo Show right here on 89.7 FM WTBR. Give us a call at 413-445-5943 for another great day in the Berkshires. A little rainy, but let's go, people. We're going to have a great time. So join us, please. Hey, Ralph. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Romeo and Zuck right here, exclusively on WTBR 89.7 FM in Pittsfield, and of course, across the globe on our website, a great website, by the way, WTBR. You can listen live just basically anywhere in the world. Hi, Ralph. How are you? Good morning, sir.
What's happening there, good buddy? Do you know I can't see you?
I know. I was surprised that you couldn't see me.
I mean, I'm not complaining because, you know, I need a rest, but I can't see you.
You can't see my balding head today, right?
I can't see that beautiful face.
I know. Oh, geez, that's amazing. I can't believe it. So anyway, so how you doing, man? The weather's been
horrible. I'm doing great,
man. The weather's been horrible here. My goodness gracious. So, yeah.
It's raining here in Sussex County.
Oh, it is? Okay, because it's been raining here all week. I feel like Noah, for crying out loud.
We have a brand new car with great windshield wipers. No worries.
I'm ready to build an ark, so that's why.
Noah.
Yeah, exactly. So I was going to say, I have an amazing guest today, by the way. So we have Kevin Curran.
How amazing is he?
It's pretty amazing. I mean, he's like my favorite writer. So I'm just trying to figure out. Oh, there he is. So I have to admit here. Da-da-da-da-da, admit. Now I'm admitting. Okay. So
let this man into the fray here. There he is.
Looking better than ever. Can I hear him? Hey, Kevin.
Kevin,
morning.
Say something, Kevin. We want to see if we can hear you.
Can we hear you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great.
There we go.
Look at all those plaques, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We're joined by my favorite writer, 23 years with the New York Post, all the years writing, and of course a great website now, Ball 9, which I absolutely love, and of course doing radio in San Diego for a lot of years, and it's my pleasure and my joy to have Mr. Kevin Curran on with us down from St. Augustine, Florida. Kevin, thanks so much for joining Ralph, and I really appreciate this so much. So I was telling Beningo, I said to Beningo this morning, I'm so excited, Joe, I got Kevin on, so maybe he'll give us a call. So anyway, thanks for joining us.
Joe's too busy with Tiki making up stuff.
Oh, there you go. I was going to say you've been on with him. You know, Evan just brought a house, actually, not too far from where I grew up in Rybrook, so I told Evan. Yeah, that's interesting. They got Tiki on with him now, so it's pretty cool. But you and Joe, I used to hear you guys on all the time, which was so much fun. But I got to ask you, all right, so let's start with the NFL. We'll start with the local teams. We could get to the baseball after, because I know you got something to say about the Jets, at least I do. But as far as the New England Patriots go, I mean, it's not a great team, but Belichick, you knew they were going to win the other day. So what's your take on the Patriots as far as, you know, what's going on and where they're going and so forth? What do you see for this season? So,
well, they're a little short, but, you know, it's going to be tough for them in that division. Beating the Jets is no big deal. I tell you, I was really surprised watching that game. I think they had a 4th-and-1 in the fourth quarter before the Jets went on their touchdown drive.
Right.
In the old days, Belichick would have just gotten that first down.
I was surprised. Yep.
Yeah, so that tells me he's holding on for dear life in that game. His game plan worked, so you got to credit him. He figured he'd let the Jets go down the field, score, win by 3. But I'm not that impressed with the Patriots. I think the Patriots, they could always turn it up a notch, and it's too early yet. I mean, the big problem with the NFL now, and I covered the NFL. I covered the 94 Chargers, went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Them, and I covered the Jets and Giants. I covered Bill Parcells. some guy named Belichick was a special teams coach when I covered the Giants way back when. I
remember.
So I've been around professional football covering it one way or another since 1977. And you know, the lack of actually practicing, it's similar to baseball where they don't do infield outfield anymore. In football, they don't practice anymore.
Right.
Bobby Ross used to let us watch every practice, and you know, you don't have to be hitting each other and crushing each other, but you have to be doing things game speed. Teams don't do things game speed anymore until the regular season starts.
Right.
That's why Aaron Rodgers got hurt, in my opinion.
Hey, Kevin, Kevin, Ralph Romeo here. Let me ask you a question. Is the game too dangerous for them to even put pads on, you know, when they don't have to put pads on, when they don't have to have contact practices? I mean, are they so deathly afraid of one of their named players getting put on the sidelines for an entire season that they're just kind of, you know, when the real thing comes along and Aaron Rodgers gets four snaps and he's out for the entire season, that should tell the tale, no?
Well, that's exactly what I just said. I mean, they don't practice. They don't practice. They don't do exhibition preseason games anymore. It's much like baseball. There's risk aversion management in football, and there's risk aversion management in baseball. That's why you should be stealing. Every team should be stealing, you know, 100 bases easily with their top guys now.
That's why I was go ahead.
I talked to Roger Cedeno a few weeks ago, and the ex-Met, and he was laughing about it, how easy it is. I said, Roger, would you be able to steal 100 bases? He goes, yeah, and I wouldn't get caught once. So you have all these nerds now, and they're infiltrating their way into football. That's why you're getting these weird play calls and the Chargers, that idiotic move where they went for it in your own territory with a 4-point lead, I believe. So the game has given way. Much like baseball, it's not as bad. Don't get me wrong. I can still watch a football game because those guys are giving it all. And listen, the game's always been physical. I remember going on the field the last quarter. They used to let us on the field doing regular season games and playoffs. And I was on the field for the AFC Championship game. Every play is essentially a car crash. And so that's what you're getting. So the game has always been physical. There's a way to do it, though, and have those guys used to it and get used to it, and they don't do it anymore. And guys get hurt early on anyway, you know, Burrow with the ankle, and you got to protect your quarterbacks. But to me, the Aaron Rodgers was at the ultimate wake-up call, and look where the Jets are now.
Right.
You know, Zach Wilson, all the hard knock stuff, all this, he's going to learn. He's teaching the sidearm throw. I thought Tony Romo made the best point of the game. I think the other Wilson was wide open on a small crossing route. Zach never saw him until the coverage was there. He doesn't see the field. So you put yourself in danger because you don't play your guys in exhibition season. And then when the games start, guys get hurt because they're not used to game speed. So that's what the NFL is now.
Right.
Some of the teams there are some good teams, but I wouldn't put the Patriots.
How do you attribute
Patriots to be a middle of the road team?
I was going to ask you, how do you attribute Joe Douglas's drafting of Wilson just by looking at him, because he had a big arm? I mean, there's a lot more to a quarterback than a big arm. I mean, you know, we used to watch Jeff.
Well, that's
George,
you hit it. Right. It was big.
Yeah,
they fell in love with your arm, man. You know, I go back to, you know, I covered. I didn't cover. I have some friends, baseball friends, and every year we take a trip. Just to get away from baseball after the season, basically. And it's scouts, it's front office people, it's writers, and we go to Wyoming.
Wow.
So we go watch a Wyoming game, and it's called Wyomania. It's kind of a fun weekend.
Oh, that's fun.
But anyway, the point of the story is I saw Josh Allen play it a couple years in Wyoming, and I was still covering the Jets on a limited basis there because I was mainly doing baseball still for the Post. And but I remember writing the column that it's a no-brainer. You got to draft Josh Allen. I mean, and then I talked to Jets people, and I don't know when Douglas got there. I don't know if this is his people or prior to him, but they're all the same pretty much.
Right.
And they said, oh, no, his completion percentage is terrible. And actually, there was a Jets scout at the game, and I went up in the press box to one of the games, and I said, you guys got to draft this guy. And he was a very young scout. Like, he was almost an intern-like scout. So that told me just by doing a little bit of homework. That's all me. That the Jets really weren't that interested. And as for completion percentage, look who he's throwing to. He's in Wyoming. They don't put two and two together anymore. You know, the first time I saw Brady, I could see how great he was going to be. Do you see? You know, Mac Jones is a manager of a game right now. I'd like to see him really get a little more, and maybe this game will get it out of him. I'd like to see him get a little bit more of a, beat the opponent more. If he did that, I think they'd be in a little better shape. I think that's where we are with the NFL.
And then, of course, my Giants. What a debacle. I mean, you know, it's amazing. With San Francisco, it's ridiculous. I mean, Barkley's always hurt, okay? And I'm sorry, Daniel Jones is not worth $40 million. I wish they would have just let him and Barkley go and said, you know what, Tyrod, be our quarterback for a year. Let's go draft another quarterback. Because I just don't see with Jones. He's inconsistent. Yes, he can run. He's athletic, but he's inaccurate at times. That's what I feel. So, and of course, the Giants.
Well, I think that's a great point. And the one quarterback I got to mention before we move on, I don't want to fly out of my head.
Yep.
I really like the Texans kid, Stroud.
Yeah, he had a great game yesterday on Sunday.
Great game, but if you see how he ran the game well, and he doesn't make dumb throws. He's a smart kid. So out of the young quarterbacks, like you were just saying, draft another. You can find them if you know what you're looking for. Right. So, yeah, so the Giants, I've been a long-time Giants fan. I go all the way back to Marty Glickman.
Right.
So I'm really dating myself, but I covered the Giants in Berlin in 94. That preseason game, I went over to Germany with them playing the Chargers, and that is an organization that just doesn't get it.
No.
It's kind of what I wrote this week in Bowl 9 when my Over the Rainbow column.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, but the Giants to me have become, and Daniel Jones is as good as Daniel Jones can be. So I don't put it all on him.
No,
I didn't think he. Great game, and he has come. It's taken a while for him to get there. He needs to run more. But the Giants and Barkley, you said it. He's always hurt. It's a selfie team. It's another since Odell Beckham was there. It's one of these selfie teams where they're there to take selfies. They're not there to win games. And there's a major difference with that kind of team. And you see it day in and day out. The Giants to me are just. I don't know if it's, you know, I knew the dad, Wellington Mara, very well, great guy.
Yep.
You know, I knew the kids, and I just think there's a leadership gap missing with that team, and until they figure that out, they're not going to be.
I agree with the leadership. Yeah, I totally agree. In fact, Marty Glickman's granddaughter's a friend of mine. I haven't talked to Jackie in quite a while, but I remember my buddy Robbie Frieden, like success. Robbie was over in Berlin in Germany over there when they had the whole.
Well, that's where Marty.
Right.
You know, I wrote a story when I was there, not to get sidetracked, this is why you have me on.
Yeah, of course.
I wrote a story with Marty talking about the 36 Olympics.
Right, right. Giants in the pro set. Yeah, I remember those days. Yeah. Yeah. I know my first game was 1972. I remember that game was Philadelphia Eagles. The Giants won 62-10. Spider Lockhart had a big game in that day. Spider Lockhart.
I was there for the fumble, so I've been there for a
long time. Oh, yeah, I'll never forget the set. Oh, my God, I'll never forget. I went to the flea market. I came back, and my dad was like, I'll never forget. It was Lee Leonard saying, Oy vey day today when Norman Edwards picked up the ball and ran the other way, yes, for a touchdown for the Philadelphia Eagles. But all right, so, Ralph, I got to tell you, I got to get to baseball because this has been the most frustrating season as a Yankee fan. I mean, my dad... His practice was 25 minutes from Yankee Stadium. I grew up. I mean, his office was 10 minutes from the stadium. I went to World Series games my whole life, you know, and playoff games. And this has been a disaster. It really has been a disaster. And I, you know, one of my friends argues with me about how Boone won 500 games. I think he's terrible. I wish he was out of there. I wish Cashman was out of there, a new regime. And I read your article about Sabian. Why can't the Yankees keep Sabian? But obviously, if he goes to the Red Sox, that's a great move. So we'll start with the Red Sox because obviously this idea of Brian Sabian coming to the Red Sox is a no-brainer from New England. And, you know, it's a no-brainer for him. So if he goes, so.
It's a no-brainer, but they won't do it because they're all
big on Bloom, right?
I'm sorry?
They're all big on Bloom, right?
Well, they love the nerd. You know, it'll be the next nerd. And nerds come in different varieties. Right, that's why I wear my shirt.
Right.
Nerding.
but Kevin, how do you let a guy...
Sam Fold. I'm sorry.
How do you let a guy like Boone, Kevin, just take over the most storied franchise evolved with no dugout experience, not one ounce of managerial experience. How do you let a guy like that, whether you like his personality, whether he plays a part in the history of the franchise with that home run he hit, how do you let a guy like that just take the reins? Like, to me, he was over his head from the start.
Well, it's a power play by Brian Cashman. He wants to have people in there that he can control.
Yes, man.
You know, Girardi, he couldn't control as much. And obviously, Joe Torre, he got rid of. So this is on Cashman. Boone is who he is. The Yankees have, think about it, the last two guys they pulled out, and Sean Casey I like. I think Sean has some good ideas, and I've known Sean since he was in the minor leagues. Right. But the last two major hires, like, hitting coach and manager, kind of important. They came out of the ESPN booth. Are you kidding me? Yeah. No, get some baseball people. And we'll see what Casey does on the road. But Boone was he's not a confrontation guy. So I think that's one of the reasons why they got him. Hal likes no confrontations. He's complete opposite of his father. And Cashman wants to control every aspect. Him and Fishman, his assistant GM or whatever. I don't know what his title is now. But they don't like baseball. I was on a trip once with the Yankees, a West Coast trip. And I saw Fishman. This was about probably 8 or 9 years ago. And he was on the trip. And to me, batting practice is a little bit of a sacred moment. You get to really get a feel for how the team is doing, what's going on, the players, how they react to each other. So about 8 days into the trip, I noticed Fishman never watched batting practice. He would sit in the dugout, put up his laptop, and look at his computer. So finally, and this is probably what got me in trouble, because there's different political aspects in baseball and also at the New York Post at the time. Yeah. And I went up to him. I said, "Hey, I got a question for you." And he puts his laptop down. Yeah, meekly. Well, yeah. What do you got? I said, "Do you ever watch baseball?" And that's it. They don't watch baseball. They get everything off. That's why. And you guys know the names better than me. But just look at the list of outfielders.
Oh my God, so bad.
Baseball. These are the kind of guys the Rays used to bring in when they were just looking to fill a hole.
Well, all these prospects never come to fruition. You wonder where they all go. I mean, where do they go? The baseball graveyard somewhere. But tell me something.
They don't teach them well. And Boone is not but getting back to your original question, Boone does not – there's no accountability from Boone. That's my weakness with Boone. How many times have we had to see Gleyber Torres – fall asleep at second base, nonchalant to play the double play ball, goes in the outfield, and the Yankees lose a game. And it's like, oh, okay, way to get him, guys.
Right, that's the way Gleyber plays, you know.
Yeah.
Does Boone do something behind the scenes that we don't know about? Is he as docile behind the scenes as he is in public?
Well, I'm sure behind the scenes he lets his true emotions show. And I think that's why Judge came out and stood up for him. And I'm very close with Aaron Judge, and I understand where Judge is coming from on this.
Right.
But Boone, I think behind the scenes, Boone is a lot like he is when he bullies umpires. You know, when he gets on the umpires. But he doesn't do that to the players. He's still a player mindset. He hasn't figured it out that you got these guys. You got to confront them sometimes. As a writer, I used to confront them all the time.
Right. Why does he show accountability?
That's finally how
field.
I got over the top with A-Rod, and how A-Rod was such a jerk for many years, but I finally called him out on it, and then it became a little bit different. Boone does not want to confront anybody. Hal does not want to confront anybody. Cashman wants to be the power broker. So it's a definition of a messed up situation. And getting back to your question about prospects, look at that, they all swing the same. They all take the same uppercut. A scout sent me a thing. A scout sent me a video this year of a game over in at AA, Somerset. And he had a couple players on the Yankees. In the on-deck circle, you got to understand this. The on-deck circle, and I played baseball through college, so I know a little bit more than your average writer. And the on-deck circle is where you got to get locked in. You're watching the pitcher. You know what had the Yankees, and this was talked to them by their coaches, in the on-deck circle, they had their hitters walk over to the net behind home and practice their swing to keep it tight, not hit the net, but have the uppercut swing. That's what they were doing in on-deck circles. So that's why they stink, all right? They don't learn anything about hitting. And also, Austin Wells, he's got some talent. He can swing a little bit, but his catching is abysmal. Yeah. Abysmal. Yeah. What are they teaching these guys? So they're not teaching anything. So I think that's what you're going to see. I think they're afraid to make major changes, but I really believe they'll finally bring in some real coaching to kind of think they can get Boone over the hump. So that I think that'll be a big change. You know, they'll bring in some coaches that know.
And Robbie, I'm sorry, just one more because this is very important to me. You know how that top hand always played a big part, Kevin? You played ball, I played ball, that top hand. Now it's the bottom hand elevation. Yeah. It's the speed off the bat, all this kind of nonsense. Don't you think that it should be a mixture of both? I'm not saying analytics is bullshit, but I'm saying that, you know, you got to have a little bit of both, and you have to round it out a little bit. Wouldn't you agree?
Totally agree. And actually, I spoke to Sabian recently. I didn't write it because, you know, he's got a lower level. He's an advisor. I'm not going to put him in the front lines. Right. But one of the things we talked about, fellas, was that when he was in San Francisco, he had a boiler room of analytics. San Francisco is the tech capital of the world, right?
Right.
When he was there, especially when he was there. Before it got out of control, how it is now. But when he was there, he had his analytics, but he kept those guys in the room, you know? Don't let them give them too much power. Give the information where they can help you here and there, trends, whatever. And it's always on past history, too. That's the other thing. So now they've redefined everything, including hitting, and you don't have those hitters that do exactly what you said with the top hand. I was with Tony Gwynn for 10 years. We talked hitting every day, right?
Nice man.
So it's funny. I was on Rob Dibble's show the beginning of last year, right in spring training, and he asked me about, hey, who's going to come on this year you think that's a really good hitter that we don't really know much about? And it just popped in my head because I had just seen him in spring training. But I said, Louis Arraez is going to be really good. This is 2 years ago now. It's not this year. So he, you know, he has the ability to hit it with or not. McNeil last year he did it. He's gotten back to it finally. You got to have, just like you said, you got to have a combination of analytics. But you also got to have a combination of different hitters in the lineup.
Right.
Everybody can be Stanton, you know? If you don't throw the pitch right where Stanton's bat is, right where he's lifting a separate, well, he doesn't really separate lift. He's more of a, he's more about what I call like a,
guess hitter?
I wouldn't even call him guess hitter. He definitely guesses, but he's more of a Neanderthal man hitter.
Right, he is.
Where he just,
his swing is awful. I can't stand watching him swing.
Right. So if you elevate the ball in any capacity or break it in any capacity, he's sunk. But if you hit his spot, he'll go with it. So my point is you need a combination of those type of hitter. You need guys to get on base. The other thing with the Yankee lineup, too, which I can never figure out is –
Lefties, Judge, no lefties?
Yeah, well, that is – it goes without saying. Yeah, I mean, that's
ridiculous. Of course. Used to be it was stocked with left-handed batters. Now they have none.
It's so comical. Yeah. I'm laughing about it all the time.
That's the most ridiculous thing. I don't get that part.
Why is Judge batting second?
Drives me crazy more than I ask Ralph. I talk about it every
2023,
week.
2023, you know?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. So I think the common thread we're seeing here that all of us see, and which the Yankee fan, and also Yankee fans are intelligent. They're not. They didn't just fall off the boat, fans. You know, they're not fans from certain cities that just jump on the bandwagon. They see all this, and I got to be honest, I'm appalled to some degree that Yankee fans still feed the beast and go to games. But I said it about 5 years ago.
Yep.
Yankee Stadium changed. It's now like a Broadway play. You take your wife to a game, and it's a social event.
Reminds me of Madison Square Garden.
Oh,
exactly right. Like with the Rangers,
you know, it's the same thing with the Knicks.
Right, it's the Knicks and the Rangers. The Rangers are my favorite team. Ralph, that leads you to your home team, the Mets. So I'll let you.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Of course, remember them, Steve Cohen.
All kinds of accolades before the season. What the hell happened?
Read over the rainbow, Ralph. That's amazing. By the way, thanks, Kevin, for that article.
Oh, I will. I'll catch. I'll definitely catch.
It's fantastic.
But no, my first question, Kev. You know, you got a guy in the dugout. We're talking about managers who had a wonderful season last year for the books. I mean, I think he overachieved, actually, if you ask me. This year, he forgot how to manage or something went awry. What happened to Buck and the connection? What happened to the Mets clubhouse with promising a car, not coming through with the car, this little thing behind the scenes that started this whole rumbling that went on. What happened in the Mets clubhouse? What happened on in the managerial end of the whole thing? What went wrong?
Well, I sensed it in spring training when I talked to Buck. He was telling me things like, you know, these young guys aren't ready to play yet, things like this. I could sense that things were being forced down his throat, okay? So in one word, a word I just made up, but he was Eplered. Billy Epler took more control, forced Buck's hand. And also, you know how it goes. When you get a manager like Buck who really knows what he's doing, now he may wear you out. That happens too. Yeah. But he knows what he's doing. So all of a sudden, you start giving him bullpen pieces that don't fit, that are rushed through the organization. What does he do? He says, okay, you want this guy up here? I'm going to put him in this game where it's 3-3 in the eighth inning. All of a sudden, it's 6-3. Right. You're losing. So I think Buck lost his ability to do the game the way he wants to do the game. And once that happened, it was lights out. There's not a lot of leadership in that clubhouse. That clubhouse, Lindor is what I call a fake leader. You know, he acts the leader part, but he doesn't really. You want to watch a team with leaders? You watch the Phillies.
Yep,
the Phillies have some leaders.
They do.
And I tell you, Lindor looks like he's hosting a. He looks like he's hosting a talk show at second base.
He's happy all the time. He's happy when he shouldn't be happy. Right. Happy, the guy strikes out three times with a smile on his face.
Yes, and he's always having a not just a hey way to go, you know, opponent competition. Yeah. I understand it's stiffer than it used to be, but he's having long conversations with every opponent that comes to second base.
Yeah, that's wearing on the nerves, boy. When he's standing on second base talking to the guy like he's his best friend, that's a little much. I like a rivalry.
Like
you know,
Pete Rose and Bud Harrelson, right? Not like exactly.
Bud
like that,
Harrelson right? And Pete Rose wouldn't
right,
do that.
Right, exactly.
Well, and the worst part is that he does it after the guy just hits a two-run double.
That's what I mean. You know, the fans don't want to see that.
Are you kidding me? You have some discretion. So I think that's what happened in the clubhouse. I think there's division in the clubhouse. I think Alonso, the way I describe Alonso, and I personally like Alonso.
Yep.
And again, Lindor's got great talent, but what did he hit early in the year? 218,
like 218
first
right.
month, like yeah. 222 the second month, yep. 230 the third month when they needed him.
Right.
He's trying to jack home runs like we talked about earlier.
And Robbie, you'll agree with this, Kevin. They changed. Something happens. When they go to a different team, they become that home run hitter they're not. Because Lindor is not a home run hitter, but he wanted to carry the whole team.
Of course.
Be, I guess, the guy they wanted him to be, paying all that, the king's ransom they paid for him. So I wonder sometimes whether it's psychological or it's kind of the skills leave them so soon. I mean, these guys aren't the players they are at 30 that they were at 25 for some strange reason. When nutrition is better, working out is you know much better than before. How do you account for that, Kev?
Well, I covered Lindor when he was with the Indians at his prime, and they just get a big. It's ego, really. I would say it's ego because he obviously still has the skills, but he wants to be something he's not. He wants to justify that $341 million, and also don't forget he has a great relationship with the owner. That's always scary to me, and the owner's wife. I think he gets along well with his wife as well. So that's always scary to me when these players start thinking they're part of the owner set instead of being a leader in the clubhouse. So I think I think Lindor, if he would just go back to looking for hitting doubles, how come he doesn't have 50 stolen bases either? When it's so easy to steal a base.
How about Nimmo yeah. having three all year? That was ridiculous.
Well, I wrote about that early in the year.
I know you did. I read. Yeah, I was reading it.
He changed his swing too.
Well. And he had as many stolen bases this year as he had last year. That's ridiculous. And they still hit him at leadoff. Okay, if he says he can't do it for whatever reason, and I think that the thing about Nimmo is I visited him when he was drafted. I went out to his Wyoming home. His father built a batting cage in the backyard.
Nice.
It wasn't really a batting cage. It was a huge barn. He's a robotic player to some degree. He's not a natural skills player. He's made himself into who he is. So either he didn't put – I wouldn't say he didn't put the effort in, but he didn't have the confidence to steal bases for some reasons. and he stopped himself from stealing bases. So that, but my point is, if you're not stealing bases, why bat him at leadoff?
Right. You know? Exactly.
They don't have a real leadoff hitter. I noticed that around the league. They're not really
the
true
Yankees
leadoff
don't.
Hitters
no.
anymore.
The Yankees don't. Jake Bauer's batting leadoff.
And the whole idea, Robbie, you agree with this. Yeah, the whole of idea of batting your best hitter second flies in the face of every baseball rule I've ever heard in my entire life.
Me?
Your best hitter is your third hitter.
WFN is getting sick of me. WFN has been sick of me for the last, 6 years saying, why does Judge bat second? I mean, I say
yeah, but you make
all
a great
the time,
point.
All
they
the
don't
time.
Get it. They don't get it, Robbie. You make a great point. That third hitter is the RBI guy, the best all around hitter.
Like Kyle Higashioka,
the third, fourth hitter are there for a reason.
Like Kyle Higashioka batting 230 is going to get a hit in the ninth spot.
And we sound like old men here, get off my lawn, but it's all true.
It's true.
Absolutely. Well, what happened is the nerds have redefined baseball, and they've sold that so hard. It's almost like they say, if you keep telling, make the lie big enough, and it's believed.
Right.
That's what's happened in baseball. They've made the lie big enough, and it's been driving me nuts, too, about Judge batting second. And they'll say, well, the lineup rolls over. No. You know what? Give me that three-run homer in the first inning.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, it's a much different game. But they don't see any of that. One other point I want to make before we move on to something else is that they don't – here's another thing that they've screwed up.
Right.
The whole idea – and this is why teams – even yesterday, I looked at the Rangers game with the Angels. Both teams were combined 1-for-13, runners in scoring position.
Yep.
They created this idea that RBIs were a feature of luck. Not ability. And that's destroyed the game from within. That's why nobody can hit with runners in scoring position.
It's ridiculous.
So they've changed the idea that an RBI is important, just like batting average. So you take two of the most important things in hitting, the ability to drive in runs like a Tony Perez and the Reds back through the day, and all the great hitters, and the ability to hit for a high average, and you make them less important, and you tell me that you're going to have a better product? No way.
I know my friend Gerard, who calls my show off and down from Florida, says, average doesn't matter because, what's the name? The kid in Schwarber's is hitting 196, but he's driven in 100 and something runs and hit 45 home runs.
Yeah, he should be batting third.
It's embarrassing. Right. It's embarrassing about 196. I'm sorry.
Well, actually, he should be batting fifth. It is embarrassing. In some ways, that catches up to the Phillies at some point. But the Phillies are committed to it. I'll let the Phillies slide with that simply because they have guys like Harper and some other guys, Bohm. You know, they have some guys, Stott. They put the bat on the ball, so they do a good job. But, it makes no sense. They sold us a bill of goods, and we keep shoveling it down our throats. Say, he's a very successful leadoff hitter. No, he's hitting 180. Right. Come on.
Do you think they gave up too soon, Kev? Do you think they threw the towel in trading Robertson?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? I mean, they gave up on what month was that? Was that July or August?
Well, it was right before trade line deadline, so that would be July now.
They were they weren't in contention, but they were there. It was a possibility.
Well, plus also, you got to look at who they were facing. Everybody else stunk.
I thought the competition was terrible.
Why can't you sneak ahead of one or two of those teams? And I think that's when Max Scherzer made his announcement about, I got to reevaluate, whatever he said exactly. That was because those guys had to be stunned. Like, what do we do? We threw in a we already lost Diaz. We're trying our best. Robertson's come in, done okay. And now we're throwing in the towel. But that's Billy Epler. That's Billy Epler, who never had a good pitching team with the Angels. And he talked the owner into the future. And here we are again. And isn't it ironic that with all the stuff about the Wilpons, and I'm not defending the Wilpons, but all the stuff about the Wilpons, this most expensive team in history couldn't even play any meaningful September game.
Amazing.
That's ironic.
It's ridiculous. 10:34 right here on WTBR. We're joined by the great Kevin Kernan, Ralph Romeo, Robbie Zucker, as always on our Tuesday spot. So, Ralph, anything you want to ask Kevin as far as baseball goes? I want to ask you about this. Go ahead.
I got one last one. I'll let you fly with it.
No, don't worry about it. Go for it.
Don't they do that all around, Kev? They, as soon as they feel They're not right in the thick of things. They throw in that proverbial towel. Then what happens? They want the fans to come out in droves anyway, but yet they're giving them a product on the field that they know they've already given up on the whole season. It's a joke, and astronomical prices they're paying, and they know the team has given up. That's a disgrace, is it not?
Well, it's a disgrace, and it's also a disgrace to the players that are still there, because you can see that. That's why Alonso suddenly goes wacky and can't hit 220, basically. You know, he swings all messed up. And here's why they do it, Ralph, I think. This is my theory on this. They're all about the future. And they can sell the future by saying, we got these great prospects. It's a prospect. And what does that do? That keeps them in business for five more years as the boss of the team. It's all about them looking after their ass, but whatever.
Right.
You know, and the owners being totally. I can't say what specific owner, but I know an owner recently was told about. I don't know if you guys are familiar with SpotTrac. I think it's called SpotRac, but it's associated with MLB. It does all, but it tells you about the number of games lost to injury and the price. You know, there's been almost $1 billion lost to injury this year. And an owner that I'm aware of recently, this was brought to his attention. They aren't even aware of these numbers. So they keep these owners like mushrooms. They keep them in the dark. They sell them a bill of goods. And all of a sudden, we got prospects. We're going to be good the next, you know, once we get over this hump, we're going to be good. That's why they all get the same MO. Finish in last place.
Right.
All of a sudden, and the Orioles got lucky because of Rutschman and things like that. All of a sudden, you got a couple of good draft picks. But are you going to keep that team? Can you tell me right now, 6 years from now, are the Orioles going to be any good? My guess is no, because they're going to
Angels is cheap. He'll give everybody up.
So it's basically a scam that these new nerd GMs have pulled on the organization. And the other scam they pulled is, once they get tired of being GM, which means they got to do a lot of work, because GM's a tough job, they push themselves up to president of baseball operations, and they hire people to do their work. So the front offices, my point is, the front offices are so overloaded with people who don't work, basically. They just, they talk to each other, they do their scam thing, and they don't have good teams, and people still go to the games for some reason. And the ultimate team like that right now, I don't want to get sidetracked, but the Padres
they're terrible.
Terrible. And they still, if you weren't in that Padre clubhouse right now, you would go around and these guys would still think they're good. Juan Soto, lose a little weight, Juan Soto. You know, he can't play left field.
They got a lot of guys around the league.
And I like
that
Bob Melvin.
They have a weight problem.
Right. And I like Bob Melvin.
You're in better shape than they are right now.
I can name on one hand in the old days, Mickey Lolich comes to mind. A couple other guys come to mind. That's it. Maybe Boog Powell was a little overweight. That's about it. I don't remember anybody.
Smokey Burgess, you know.
Yeah, there you go. You go back further than I do.
And if you look at those guys now, they're not even overweight. First of all, and to me, this is the funniest thing about the Mets. And again, I'm not into fat shaming here or anything.
Too late.
Yeah. My brother owned the weight loss camp up here.
Come on. You can't be your deal.
That's ridiculous.
It's like he swallowed a teammate there.
It can't be. It can't be. And how do you go in selling that to you? Oh, this guy's a great DH. But what happens when he gets on base? You know? So everything they do is ridiculous to some degree, but people don't call them out. And also, I got to mention, too, I think the media is partly to blame for this.
They're
now,
so soft.
They all brought this nerd stuff. Yep. And you even still see it. I read an article today about, the Yankees have to evolve in the front office. Oh, no, they don't have to evolve. They need to get rid of the bad ones. Get rid of Cashman.
Right.
Stop covering up for Cashman. And that's what some of the major writers are doing.
They do the same thing for Salah. I see in the press conference the same thing. But Stanley, too. You know, the Chargers have been my second favorite team since I'm a little kid. And, I mean, I'm watching press conferences with Stanley the last few weeks. I couldn't believe. I heard – thank God I wasn't watching the game. When he goes for it, okay, on a fourth down and like a half a yard, they're winning by four against the Vikings. He won't punt the ball. He wants to go for it. And that was blew the game. I mean, the guy's a complete idiot. I can't stand watching him.
You know, Robbie, there's a little strategy involved when you criticize your players in front of the media. There's something to be said about that. That's a good strategy sometimes.
I mean, when Salah's
embarrassed, don't embarrass the guy to tears, but embarrass him just enough to give him a kick in the ass.
Right. So that brings me to the New York Knickerbockers and the New York Rangers, obviously.
The Knicks, yeah. Wow.
When I did Marv from Marv, Marv cracked up. He says, wow, even to Sal Messina, too. Remember Sal Red Light Messina. But your thoughts on the Knicks. I know you covered basketball for years. You covered Bill Walton, right, and covered all the guys, the Celtics, the Knicks. So your take on the Knicks, I mean, I can't stand the NBA right now, Kevin. It's very hard for me to watch an NBA game, I'll be honest with you. It really is, with all the three-point nonsense and the lack of defense and lack of the, you know, ability to pass and break down defense off the dribble. I the analytics are worse to me in basketball than anything. So, but I wanted to get your take on the Knicks, yeah. So,
well, let me go backwards first because the point Ralph made about Salah.
Yeah, yeah.
What he should have said was, you know, I know he's in a tough situation and everything like that. It's but he's got to see the field better. If you just say that,
right,
that puts the kid on notice.
It's a legitimate criticism. There's nothing
wrong
with that.
It's a legitimate criticism. And then you show him in the video room, and you know, you show the film, and you get on his ass any way you want in the closed doors. But it's again, what are we talking about? We're talking about selfie generation.
Yep.
And you know, it's all about him, his mom, this, that. It's every the headband. You know what?
Right.
Going back to the before we get to the next game, last football with the Giants.
Yep.
I covered the Giants when they had a bad offense, and I was very close to a lot of defensive players. I was younger, so
it's about the 70s. You know,
Fred Van Pelts of the world. Oh, and things like that.
We know that team very well.
I remember the guys telling me, the defensive guys, when the offense used to go on the field, they used to say to the offense, okay, offense, hold them, you know? that's how bad it was.
I remember that, right.
And that's what the Jets are now with this offense, you know? And I don't even know. Didn't they get that running back Cook? Is he still on the team?
He was like invisible yesterday. And you knew what's amazing to me is that Belichick had three corners hurt, and they still played man. They were still playing man yesterday. It was amazing. You think they wouldn't play man because of all the injuries, but they did. And they said,
yeah, exactly. So that takes care of that. But the Knicks, I've lost interest. I have to be honest.
I know, it's hard.
When you cover. You know, Bird, Magic, Walton, all the great said, yeah. Bernard King in those great years.
Oh, yeah, I love Bernard.
He was unstoppable. And you see what those guys did. And the other thing that I have to mention that turns me off about the NBA is the load management thing.
Oh, it cracks. I hate it.
You know, and LeBron, again, he's a great player, but it's a little too much LeBron. So as for the Knicks, I think I've always said for years, and they did a lot better with the guard.
Right.
I always said they kept getting point guards who dribbled as if they had a square basketball. They didn't. So they're a little better there with the point guard. So that's going to help them. But they need to get more. They need to get more players who you can count on in clutch situations. Right. So how do you do that? That's the tough situation because you got to understand when you play at Madison Square Garden. You're immediately going to be elevated thinking you're better than you are because the fans are so good and they'll back you. Whereas, so you need to be that player who digs a little deeper. And I don't think that's the problem we see every year with the Knicks. They have a couple guys, you know, Brunson, you know, like I said, I like him. The coaching always leaves me a little short too, to be honest with you. And again, when I see, you know, I don't know if you guys ever watched The Last Dance, but I'm in the last scene of the last episode of The Last Dance. Right. They actually have me, and it's the only interview they have that's original from that time period with a single individual writer. I'm walking out of it was the last game, and I'm walking out with Dennis Rodman because I got along great with Rodman. I knew where he would hang out.
Yeah, I remember reading about
Dennis. Always take a back door out of the clubhouse. He did the Madonna thing, you know. He would go out the back door, and so I after that final win, I was the only reporter there, and there was the NBA was always great about filming things. Stern was a genius, and so they had an NBA camera crew actually following me walking out with Rodman, and I asked Dennis. I said, Dennis, and I was on deadline, so I had no time to write. I needed to get back and write a whole column in 20 minutes.
Wow!
So I had one question for him, and I got out of there, basically. I walked with him, you know, and because Dennis and I got along, you know, he was very active with the question. I said, Dennis, is this the greatest team of all time? I know it's a stupid question, but I had to ask the question, and because you got to get a reaction. And he looked at me, stopped, and he said, if you can't see this is the greatest team of all time, you must be doing drugs, man. And now, that was a great quote because of who Rodman was, what was going on in his personal life. So that those teams, that Michael Jordan team, what he did to his teammates to elevate them every day and challenge them was incredible. That's what's missing in the NBA now. The individual player, superstar, who challenges his teammates to be better. Kobe did that to some degree, but I tell me, what player does that now? You know, I don't know. You know,
LeBron
does it to a degree, but if he can't do it, he'll just jump to another town. So, you know.
Yeah, that's the vagabond existence of these NBA players. They go everywhere. You know, it gets a little too much heat at home. They'll take off somewhere. I cannot stand that. And you know what it brings to mind, Robbie, Kevin? It brings to mind Jackie Robinson when they, you know, it was before my time. They asked him, you know, would you go to the Giants? And he said, over my dead body. And that was the difference between that athlete and these athletes.
Absolutely. So a couple questions. Okay. So over the years, I mean, you've met so many people. Like, who is your favorite athlete that you've either interviewed or spent time with, and so forth? The guy that I loved the most was Sid Luckman. He was the greatest guy I ever had dinner with. Amazing guy. So I was just going to ask you, you know, like anybody that comes to mind that you liked spending time with or really enjoyed, you know, interviewing.
You've written so many books too. I was never intimidated. Only one time was I intimidated sitting down and having lunch with somebody. I didn't do a lot of boxing, but I got on this thing where we went up to Muhammad Ali's workout.
Okay.
And actually, as it broke down, he was still boxing, and I sat right next to him during lunch, so I had to ask like questions. You know, keep the conversation. That was the only time I think I would ever say I was kind of intimidated by an athlete. To be honest, my success has always been that I treated the athletes like regular people.
Right, exactly.
If they needed to be called out, I do it in a quiet way, but like, like A-Rod, for example. Dan Shaughnessy and I, this is when A-Rod was at his absolute worst personality-wise with the Yankees, when all that crap was going down.
Oh, yeah.
And he would kind of ignore us. And so me and Dan are standing in the old Yankee clubhouse. Dan Shaughnessy, the great columnist from the Globe. And Dan and I go way back because we covered those together. Because the way it was, the Knicks would get knocked out every year.
Right.
So when the Post was the Post, they would immediately say, okay, go with the Celtics. And so the Celtics were my home team every playoff. So I got to, you know, hang out with those guys at the LA Marriott, you know, and things like that.
Right.
So Danny and I were talking, and Danny didn't like A-Rod. And we were just saying, I said it loud enough. Alex was about 6 feet away doing something. I said, watch, I'll say hi to this guy, and he won't even respond and say hi. And Alex heard me say that.
Right.
So Alex walked by. I go, hi, Alex. And then because he heard me say that, which I wanted him to hear me say that, he turns around and goes, oh, hi, Kevin. How are you today? You know, and then, so if you do that, and later on, long story short, he invited me down to Miami before the last couple of years of his career when he's trying to rebuild his personality and his career. He would invite me down, and we'd have honest discussions about, you know, you're a jackass and here's why, you know, and to his credit,
because
I give him credit, he changed. He changed.
Right, okay.
And, you know, he's still Alex. He's always going to be Alex.
He really did change?
He did change. He was such a jackass that.
But he kind of turned it around a bit.
He turned it around a bit. Yeah, he started being at least listening to other. And if you look at it, you got to give him credit. The guy Manfred who wanted to bury him now he's suddenly hugging him. So if it's real, fake, whatever, you got to give Alex Rodriguez credit for changing his and now he's an owner in the NBA. You know, I actually think Alex is one of the smartest baseball people I have ever talked to.
He's very bright. Yeah.
I remember him sitting there with Mike Francesa swearing up and down. He was clean.
Yes. Yes.
That's my best memory of A-Rod, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, he went from that to the guy who admitted, and it's still coming out. You know, you still see stuff. But again, I was around those players. I'm telling you right now, and I won't name names, but those guys that you would be shocked, shocked to know that were on the juice.
Oh, for sure. You don't have to look like Superman to be on this stuff. You
know what's no, and that was the biggest misconception. And even Barry, I'll tell you a quick Barry Bonds story.
Right.
Since you're asking about the way how you get along in personalities, Barry Bonds was very close with Tony Gwynn, and Tony was the greatest guy in the world. Tony let me open his check once just to get the feeling of what it's like to make that kind of money.
So missed.
Barry. So I had an idea for a story because I knew Barry was such a great hitter. This was before. Barry hit the home run, broke the records and all that stuff. So I said, listen, we got a weekend trip. Let's go up to San Francisco. I'm going to talk to you, Tony, about hitting, and then Barry about hitting, and do almost like a Ted Williams, Tony Gwynn type thing, but do it with Barry. And Tony loved the idea. He said, yeah, let's do that. And he gave me some great stuff. So he said, I'll talk to Barry for you. And I did all the right things. So I went to the PR department. So it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, Saturday, Sunday with day games. So Friday, I go over there to talk to Barry, sitting in the dugout. Barry, you got 5 minutes. Tony talked to you, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm busy. Okay. I'll come back tomorrow, though, Barry. I'm going to be back tomorrow. Okay. Talk to you tomorrow. So next day comes. Barry's sitting in the dugout. Hey, Barry, I need those 5 minutes. And actually, when you say 5 minutes, you're going to take 15. So they know that. And he goes, nah, I'm really busy. He's not doing nothing. He's not doing nothing. So now I knew I got one more day. I didn't want to push it. So I said, okay. We have to get this done tomorrow morning. There's going to be no batting practice, so you'll have plenty of time. Okay, good. We'll do it tomorrow. So now the third day comes. He's sitting there. He's leaning on his bat. I have bats over there. I should just lean. He's leaning on his bat. He sees him coming over, says hi. I said, Barry, let me ask you those questions, get this done right now. He goes, no, man, I'm busy. So most writers would have said, okay, we'll catch you next time or whatever, or walked away. That's most writers, not me. I said, I looked him right in the eye. I said, you're busy. And he goes, yeah, man, I'm really busy. And he, again, not doing anything. I said, well, you know what, Barry? I'm pretty busy too. And I said, just like, because this is the New Jersey of me coming
right,
out.
There you
now.
Go.
He thinks I'm from San Diego, but I'm from New Jersey.
So is Ralph.
And he goes, what are you busy doing? And he said, just like that. And I said, I'm busy thinking about my MVP vote. And I was in the, obviously, baseball writers, and I had an MVP vote that year. Right. And there's only two in each city. So Barry goes, you got an MVP vote? I said, I sure do. He goes, sit right down. He gives me 30 minutes. He's awesome. That's when he first talked about the grandfather's cross being why he wore it.
Right.
I go in later to talk to Dusty Baker about it. And Dusty says, wow, I can't believe Barry told you all this stuff. But that's what you had to do with Barry. You had to confront him. And at the end of the conversation, he says, man, I got to ask you. He said, are you going to vote for me? I said, Barry, I was always going to vote for you, but you were busting my chops, so I had to bust yours. So that's what you have to do sometimes to get through to a player who's a pain in the neck. So if you take that approach and you deal with the players and treat them with respect, again, I go back to, Phil Simms was a great guy. Eli Manning. I knew Eli. This is an interesting story, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
I covered that game in San Francisco where they won with the late kick. I forget what year it was.
Yep.
It was in the old Candlestick. And so after that game, I knew Eli was really different then, because after the game, this was one of the old club locker rooms where you could still – it was just a locker room, not like they are fancy Taj Mahals now. So the showers was right in the middle. So we had to wait. So we're waiting. And you're not looking in the showers, but the shower where you go into the shower, both showers on the right and left, there's an area right in front. After that game, Eli was literally wrestling with one of the offensive linemen, like screwing around like you would in high school,
Right.
And that showed me how strong he was and stuff like that. So there's so much to be learned if you really look at the personalities of the people. And now you see the real, everybody's getting to see what Eli is like on the show with his brother. He's a funny guy, a regular guy, not afraid to take you on. And to their credit, I think most athletes, that's why I got along well with them, because I respect their jobs. To be a baseball player, man, that's the hardest thing in the world to hit a baseball, like they say. So that's the problem with the nerds. They look at everything from above. Most of them never played. for example, the president of the Tigers, who came from San Francisco where he was the GM, and I'm not saying you have to play. Frank Cashin was a writer. He didn't play, but he understood the game and how hard it was. But the guy that's in charge of the Tigers now, and by the way, the Tigers stink.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Yeah, he played club lacrosse at UCLA. So we're getting people in charge of teams that have no baseball background. Frank Cashin covered baseball. Right, he knew baseball.
Right.
So that's another big part of the problem. So, but I, because of my relationship with the players, and later on at the David Ortiz golf tournament, I remember Alex, this was before Manny was a star. Manny was just a kid. He came to the golf tournament because it was Dominican Republic. And he's having dinner with a bunch of guys. And A-Rod was hosting the dinner. And I happened to be walking by the room. A-Rod called me in and said, I'll never forget, he brought Yonder Alonso and Manny up to me. And he told those guys, he said, listen, guys, you're going to be in the league for a long time. If Kevin comes over and asks you a question, make sure you answer it because he'll treat you fairly.
There you go.
And so that's what I'm talking about, A-Rod changed from that.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, that's why you're my favorite writer because you says, how would Coach always say, tell it like it is, folks. But I got about 2 minutes. So, Kevin, thank you so much for this.
That's the quickest hour on radio.
Oh, my God.
Right,
absolutely.
I can't believe it's
I could do
hour.
It for like 3 hours. I mean, I could go on and on. I mean,
when we do a show, Robbie, it feels like four.
I know. And it's crazy because Ralph and I have been callers to the fan, I've been 36 years. I've been Robbie in Portchester, Robbie in New York, PA, Robbie in Lennox now for like
No, but Francesa wrote me in his will. He left me something.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. And it's funny because Beningo's, I still tell Ralph, Beningo's daughter lives like two blocks from me up here. So it's funny because I've been trying to get to Joe to come up here once in a while. But if he's listening.
Well, I was on FAN Ricky had me on about a month ago.
Oh, I love Ricky. He's awesome. Ricky's, I know.
Yeah, and I was on Saturday morning when he did I call Ricky the vampire.
Oh, yeah. I owe him some artwork, so I told Ricky. Yeah,
So he had me on a daytime on a Saturday, and that hit went for like a 20-minute half. And Ricky's great.
Oh, he's awesome.
And that's when I really laid it out on the Yankees because nobody was doing that in New York. Yeah. So,
Kevin, I do a show on a different station, but we don't talk sports. But if you want to come on and talk about what's going on in the world, it'd be great to have you.
Well, you guys got my contact numbers.
Yeah, thanks.
It just depends what's going on, obviously.
Gotcha, yeah,
but later on today, because Dibble has me on once, kind of like his baseball guy. So, and he's a great one to have. So, I enjoyed it, fellas. Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Thanks so much.
Healthy, happy New Year. Thanks, Kevin. Best to the family. Appreciate it so much.
We'll okay.
Let's do it again sometime. Seriously. All right. Thanks again.
You got it.
Right,
no problem.
You got it, man. All the best. Bye-bye. The great Kevin
Curry.
We got
2 minutes to sign off now.
Yeah, 2 minutes. Amazing. So, yeah, that was fantastic. I'm telling you, you can have Kevin on forever.
He's a very, 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 very outspoken guy.
He's amazing. That's why he's my favorite writer of all time. I mean, he's just, he tells it like it is. Read his article, too, on Ball 9 are fantastic. I mean, like, I read the article today about the Over the Rainbow. He did a thing called the Four Flops about the Red Sox, San Diego, and the New York teams. That's fantastic. And he tells it like it is.
I have another guy named Kevin getting in touch during the course of the show.
Yeah.
Kevin in Long Island, Long Island. Yeah. He said the Yankees are doomed with Cashman. They have to go in a different direction.
Absolutely.
Ask Robbie about it. He's the Yankee fan.
It's ridiculous. Oh, I mean, the problem with Cashman is, look at his – okay, the man can't build a farm system to save his tachis, right? I mean, he's got one player that's been outstanding. That's Aaron Judge. He does all of his acquisitions as far as his pitching acquisitions over there have been terrible. He traded a guy like J.P. Sears, who's a very good young pitcher, to Oakland for a guy like Montas. And Susan Walms was saying this. He was hurt. I mean, 2 weeks before they got him, he was hurt. It's crazy.
I actually think Susan Walms should bat third. What do you think, man?
Yeah, why not?
Would she cog up the bases?
Why not? She looks great, by the way. I was watching the old timers thing. It brought goosebumps back, bringing up all those guys. It was amazing. So, hey, buddy, listen, let's do it again next Tuesday. As always, my best.
I enjoyed it, man. You had a great choice of guests.
Love you, man. Oh yeah, Kevin's the best. So, all right, we'll see you next week.
Fantastic, and I love doing it, man.
Oh, by the way, I'm doing a new intro after, so I'll intro our program together.
By the way, anybody wants to get in touch, listen to me tonight on WPAT.
Absolutely.
6 o'clock in the evening Eastern Time, WPAT, like the name Pat, 646-492-2436.
We'll see you, brother. God bless. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, buddy.
See you next week.